going to have a public work session on three bills, Senate Bill 573, Senate Bill 686, and Senate Bill 448. The chairman will exercise his prerogative to realign the schedule this morning, and we'll begin with some school funding that are being brought by Representative, or Senator Atkinson, excuse me, Senator. And so we'll begin with 573 this morning. Public hearing only today. Senator Atkinson, would you like to come up? And actually, what I'd like to do, Steve, is have you give the committee a brief orientation to Senate Bill 573, and then ask Senator Atkinson to make his presentation.
Okay, Senate Bill 573 is a change in the school distribution formula. Currently in the formula, there's a teacher experience factor that's based on the current year average number of years of teacher experience in the district compared to the statewide total. And what the bill does is to change the data that's used for that teacher experience factor to the prior year. Currently, in the formula, it's for the current year experience, as are other factors in the formula.
Senator Atkinson, how are you this morning?
I'm doing well, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is State Senator Jason Atkinson. Last week, it was a thrill of mine to relieve you from school finance discussions and to bring you a bill regarding Internet taxation.
That was a mutual feeling. We really liked that.
And today, I have brought you, and it gives me great pleasure to say, two minor technical changes. By the way, of Senate Bill 573 and Senate Bill 686.
These are school financing adjustments. Is that technical, small technical?
Small technical. And
no good deed ever goes unpunished.
That's right. And it also gives me great pleasure, Chairman and members of the committee, that it is the exciting Ag Lean Day right next door, of which my vote is required as soon as I ring the store bell and run. If I could just give brief introductions to both of them. I have also brought two bona fide experts who can talk about them, but both of them, particularly 573, deals with a calculation regarding teacher experience, and the next bill that you'll hear, or if you'd like to have them combine, would be the calculation dealing with minimum payments that school districts must distribute to public charter schools. As I've been introduced to them by these two people who have come today to testify of these being technical changes, and I just wish to thank the committee for hearing these. And I will now leave it up to the bona fide experts as I step back to fix all that is with the grass seed councils and other ag liens. How's that?
Best regards to the Ag Committee. Thank you, Senator, for bringing your bills before the committee. We'll go then to the certified smart folks and tell us what happens. What are we trying to accomplish here, really?
Good morning, Chair Ferrioli, members of the committee. My name is Deborah Ringgold. I reside at 2616 Northwest Lupine Place in Corvallis. I am a member of the Budget Committee of the Corvallis School District 509J. I appear today in support of Senate Bills 573 and 686. Each is designed to make the difficult task of building annual school district budgets more certain and therefore more useful to school board members and the superintendents directly responsible for the management of our school districts. Senate Bill 573 specifies that the calculation of the state school fund grant to school districts be based on average teacher experience of the prior year. At the present time, teacher experience is based on current year assessments that are often not finalized until late third or fourth quarter of an actual academic year. Senate Bill 686 specifies that the calculation of minimum payment amount that a school district must distribute to public charter schools be based on the school district's general purpose grant per extended weighted average daily membership, that is, extended ABMW. At the present time, this distribution is made on the basis of ADMW rather than extended ADMW. And as you know, extended ADMW equals ADMW or ADMW of the prior year, whichever is greater, and is the basis for the distribution of public schools other than charter schools. This bill will put charter schools and other public schools on the same footing and will foster greater certainty in both the charter schools and school district budget processes. Moreover, this bill will ensure that charter schools have the benefit of extended ADMW as a base, the better of the current or prior year ADMW. Now, while some might argue that Senate Bills 573 and 686 are merely housekeeping bills, I request your serious consideration of these two proposals. Anything that can be done to assist our public schools in managing their scarce resources in a more effective and efficient manner is worth our effort. Reducing uncertainty in the annual budget process will assist our elected officials, administrators, and educators in their efforts to better serve our children. I thank you for this opportunity to read my statement into the record, and I thank Senator Jason Atkinson for sponsoring these bills on my behalf. I would be happy to answer any questions.
Well, the chair has a question.
Yes, sir.
On which bill were you testifying?
573 and 686.
Both bills.
Yes, sir.
We're only in public hearing on 573.
Oh, forgive me. I apologize.
All right. Have been looking at the relating clause. Any questions? And we also have Kathy Rodman.
Yes, sir.
Good morning.
Good morning, Chair Ferrioli and members of the committee. My name is Kathy Rodman. I live at 1156 Northwest Charlemagne, Corvallis, Oregon. And for the past 10 years, I've worked for the Corvallis School District in the budgeting and business office. So I have hands-on experience interpreting and applying the state school funding formula. I'm here on my own time today to advocate on behalf of Senate Bill 573. As a school business manager, we're dealing with a high level of uncertainty. I'm sure you can appreciate in terms of trying to predict enrollment, trying to predict how many kids will stay and of what kinds we'll have coming through our system, what's happening in the statewide enrollment picture, what's happening with the statewide funding. And one of the things in the formula that seems like could be locked in, so it wouldn't have to be quite so uncertain, is the average teacher experience. This isn't an attempt to change the distribution under the formula. This is an attempt to bring a little bit more certainty into it. I think that as people dealing with the state funding formula, you are aware of how it works. The knowing what you have to work with when you're preparing a budget is very important. And if you don't find out what the statewide average teacher experience is until March or sometimes April, it becomes almost impossible to deal with changes that affect your funding that late in the school year. So I hope that you consider seriously approving Senate Bill 573. Thank you for the opportunity, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
Question, Mr. Lester.
Mr. Kathy, has there been that much changeover from year to year, what that formula is? I suppose there might have been the last couple of years with the huge retirements.
Chair Ferrioli, members of the committee, there can be, and I guess that's what worries me, because I believe we will continue to have significant retirements over the next 5 years. And so to me, that brings in a level of uncertainty in the formula. And we have seen in our own district a significant change in experience. And then looking at that statewide, it becomes very difficult to predict.
Can you speak to what kind of financial changes did you see from your year?
Financial changes related to average teacher experience?
Yeah.
I believe it was 3 years ago, 97, 98, we saw a drop in our average teacher experience of a little bit over 2 years. And that year, that made about a $500,000 difference for Corvallis very late in the year. And the reason we didn't know it earlier is that all of the earlier predictions that came out from Department of Ed showed a similar drop or a similar pattern statewide, so that we were left dangling. I believe that we had retirements earlier than many of the other school districts. But what can happen because of this, it happens late in the year, so you can't really make minor adjustments to your program to fix it. And I think it's unnecessary. From a practical standpoint, if you were designing something to work well, I believe that you'd design it to lock in the things you can know about up front and the things that you can't control. I mean, you'd want to bring some certainty to them. By letting it float for three quarters of the fiscal year, it's poorly designed. So that's a personal point of view.
Mm-hmm. Further questions from the committee?
Any?
The question the chair has to do with page 1, line 14 of the bill, if you have a copy.
Yes, sir.
There's a change where the word certified is deleted and the word licensed is added. Can you detail for us whether what is the purpose of that change?
I believe I can. Legislative counsel that drafted the bill inserted that because she realized that that was an oversight, that the word certified had been changed to licensed in other parts of the statute. So that was unrelated to what we were forwarding.
Thank you. Any other questions? So what this actually does is simply changes the date on which the grant calculations will be based. It will be prior year as opposed to current year.
Yes, sir.
And that simply allows you to make the calculation and adjustments on an orderly basis rather than having two-thirds or three-quarters of the year elapse before those adjustments are made.
Yes, sir.
Okay. Effect on the budget is net zero?
I think that it might have a slight effect. I think on the budget, your statewide budget, it'll have a zero effect. It might have some shifting between school districts from year to year, but not like a change in the distribution formula itself. It should be minor, but once we implemented it, it would be much easier to help understand what the budget would be for the next year.
Well, I think we're all in favor of having better information earlier for budgeting processes. Colleagues, we have not scheduled a work session for this bill today, so I'll ask you just to formulate your opinions, and we'll hold this bill for a future date for a work session. Let's go to close the public hearing on 573 with the request for any other person here who wishes to offer testimony to come forward. Hearing and seeing none, we'll close the public hearing on 573 and open the public hearing on Senate Bill 686. Senator Atkinson is not here even to ring the doorbell and run, so I guess she'll have to make the entire presentation. And this does, in fact, have an effect on how charter schools are funded. Perhaps you could explain, Steve, what the bill does, and then we'll let the ladies make their presentation.
Okay, Senate Bill 686 deals with the payment that a school district has to make to the charter school, or the minimum payment amount. Currently, in calculating the amount at the district level, it uses average daily membership, calculate a per student amount. And then a percent of that is paid to the charter schools. The bill would change that calculation to calculate the per student amount on an extended ADMW basis. And then that dollar amount would be multiplied times the average daily membership weighted of the charter school. So it doesn't extend the concept of extended to the charter school. Charter school would still use ADMW. But it changes how that dollar amount is calculated using extended, which would lower the dollar amount that has to be paid then to the charter school from the district.
Okay. Is that your understanding of the bill?
Actually, I had a somewhat different understanding of the bill, and that is that what we would accomplish would be to change the base on which the 80 or 95% would be allocated to extended ADMW, which is exactly the same basis that we use for the rest of the public school system. and that it would mean that the charter school would, like the rest of us, be able to look at this year's enrollment or the prior year's enrollment, whichever was larger. Okay.
Chair Ferrioli, my understanding of the bill is that it would change the funding portion only under the general purpose grant and change the definition of general purpose grant for charter schools to be exactly the same as the general purpose grant for public schools. By placing the word extended in the general purpose grant, it means that with the money the school district is getting in would be the same same dollar level that we would be paying out to the charter school, the public charter school. For the record, do I need to say my name again?
Sure.
Okay. My name's Kathy Rodman, 1156 Northwest Charlemagne, Corvallis. And one of the things that happened in Corvallis this year, we had a startup charter school, and Corvallis has had a 6-year decline in enrollment, and we believe that would continue again this year. So when we turned in our information to the Department of Education about enrollment, we predicted a continued decline. And last year during our budget hearings and during the charter school hearings, we were trying to explain to the school board what it meant that with a decline in enrollment, we would be paying out money to the charter school before we got any money in from the state for that purpose, because the enrollment from the charter school wasn't expected to increase our overall enrollment. And so it was a cash flow issue. What happened then is that in the fall, we had 100 extra students. Our enrollment increased rather than declined. And so at that point then, the State Department of Ed changed the calculation for charter schools to match exactly what we were bringing in under the state formula, 48.36 per student. It was difficult enough in the spring to try to explain to our school board and our public how the charter school would affect the financial future of the school district. And it was difficult to help the charter school understand that nothing they did caused the amount that they were about to receive to be decreased. I had warned them throughout the process that the state funding formula is very uncertain and you need a contingency, but they weren't expecting right off the bat to see a $200 per student drop. So it does lower the amount that the school district would pay to be the same basis that the school district received.
I'm still getting a little bit lost here. The school district received less because of declining enrollment. So the charter school received less, and they were not expecting to receive less.
Right. The school district had an increase in enrollment.
Mm-hmm.
And because the funding formula works based on the... Let me step back a minute. Chair Ferrioli, members of the committee. The funding formula works in a way that helps protect a district for 1 year in the event of a decline in enrollment.
Sure.
And that protection helps us offset the cost of maintaining the same building with fewer students.
Right.
That protection then is eroded with the missing word here, extended, in the charter school funding bill. Because if a school district is in a declining enrollment situation, it is paying out to the charter school on a higher basis than what it's actually bringing in.
Mm-hmm.
So what happens then, what happened to us then is that when we had an increase in enrollment that brought us above the prior year, that meant that the charter school had a decrease in funding to match what we were actually getting in. So
okay, that's where I think I'm getting lost. The charter school received the amount that would have been distributed on an ADMW basis. But because the public schools that were not charters received the extended ADMW, they actually had more students to count and received more funding. So it wasn't that the charter school lost anything. It was that the charter school didn't gain anything in relative terms to the public schools. You have to stop calling a lack of increase a cut in this process, because it's just not the right terminology. It's not a cut. It just didn't go to the extended ADMW formula as the rest of the school district did. Is there a reason for us to treat the schools that are public charter schools differently than the schools that are not public charter schools?
I don't believe I'm asking you to treat them differently.
No, you're asking us to treat them identically. What I'm asking you is there a reason for us to have treated them differently?
Well, I believe they have been already. They have waivers in terms of requirements. They have $100,000 grants for startup costs. They have the ability to operate with less expensive staff, because only half of their staff have to be licensed.
These are public schools, is that correct?
They are public charter schools.
Okay, but they are public schools.
They are.
Okay.
And
I'm just focusing on the ADMW issue.
Well, and
or the ADMW extended issue.
So I believe they should be funded on the extended ADMW, the general purpose grant for extended ADMW.
Will this have the effect of giving more funds to charter schools that are in declining enrollment districts?
No, it won't. It would have less funds in declining enrollment districts to go to charter schools.
Okay. Question? Mr. Vice Chair?
The question is, Steve. Charter school populations are included in the count for the public school in terms of the grant they get.
Yes. The charter school students are counted as part of the district count. Yes.
So in essence, we're putting them inside, and the funding they get is dependent on the total student population within the public schools and within the public charter schools.
Yes.
So I guess it would make sense that if the funding comes that way, that the flow-through should be the same, too. And I think that's the logic the chair was
trying to get at. As far as trying to get at, Mr. Vice Chair, right? And I guess the question, the place where it falls apart for me is that in relative terms, there are no winners or losers. It's just, how do we calculate the way the dollars flow through the district to either the public or the public charter school? And I guess from a student standpoint, from a parent standpoint, I certainly wouldn't want my ADMW extended dollar to be different in one classroom than it is in another. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what the bill gets.
Yeah.
What you get is what you're going to pass along. Is that what you're trying to get to?
But
not more and not less.
May I also comment that it does provide a certainty in the budgeting process for both the charter school and for the district as well, which I think also helps us serve the students better. I mean, there was a bit of a surprise here, was there not?
For the charter school.
And they got $200 less per student.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Than the public school. The non-chartered public school?
No, sir. Chair Ferrioli, members of the committee, they received $100 less than they had believed they would receive based on the allocation under the existing language.
That helps clarify. Was there any differential between the ADMW and the ADMW extended? In other words, was there actually a difference between the charter public school and the public school?
Yes, sir, there was.
And that was, what, $55 per student?
No, sir. The public school was already at, it was closer to $150 or $200 per student difference that was in favor of the charter school.
Okay. And how did that come about?
It came about because the lacking the word extended in the charter school bill meant that the Department of Ed had to take the all of the revenue generated under the state school funding formula mm-hmm. and divide it by the current number of students for the public school district rather than the extended number of students. And so that lack of that one word meant that the public charter school students were receiving more money for extended ADMW than the public school one. Mr. Chair.
Senator Castillo.
Thank you. I'd just like to ask staff, we've heard the intent of what the bill is intended to do, but basically what you see it doing, that it would just bring about more certainty, just clarifies that the charter schools know with more certainty what they're going to get, and doesn't really add or subtract funding to the formula used to fund charter schools, or?
It doesn't change what the district gets.
Okay.
It doesn't change the formula in terms of the allocation of dollars to the district. It only deals with, once the district dollars are determined per student, do you calculate the district dollars on a per extended ADMW basis or just ADMW basis? Before calculating the percent of that general purpose grant, then it has to be transferred into the charter school. It's dealing with that per student amount calculated at the district level. It does not change the student count that's used for the charter school that's multiplied times that district per dollar per student amount.
Mm-hmm.
So the student count at the charter school level is still ADMW. So that doesn't change.
I get it.
Right? But the district uses extended ADMW in the formula to determine how much it gets. The charter school count is still ADMW, but it would be in the bill, it would be multiplied times a district dollar amount for extended ADMW, not for ADMW.
Okay, let's go back to the extended portion, or the extended concept. If your student population is declining, but you're able to count the student population that you have plus add the students that you lost for an extended ADMW, you've got more students by head count in the public school. And so if you divide the total dollars that are received in distribution by the mm-hmm. relatively larger number of students,
mm-hmm.
you get a lower ADMWE factor. But if you look at the charter school is unlikely to be losing enrollment. Since it's a new concept, probably gaining an enrollment. But if they calculate, or if the calculation that's required from the school district is ADMW, then they would go back to the actual nose count to divide the total amount received, and that's where you receive the differential numbers.
So would this, in effect, then be a way of holding the funding to charter schools harmless, regardless of what happens on declining enrollment with the district?
If that's your intent, you're looking at the wrong bill.
Okay.
What this does, in fact, is it would have the tendency to equalize on a per-student basis the funding at both the charter school and the public school.
Okay.
But it would have the effect of lowering the funding, at least initially, to a base. For the charter public school, who has been receiving a relatively smaller, this is where my English major leaves education leaves me hanging. Is it the numerator or the integer? They have a smaller fraction of students to calculate the distribution of pie off of, and so they were getting more. They got a richer mixture, in other words. This leans them back to the same level as the entire district, if this bill's adopted. That make sense?
Yep. Thank you.
Questions?
So in essence, it treats them roughly the same as the students inside the broader district.
I think what it says to the school district is what you get, you'll pass on.
Yeah, that's essentially what it says. Although I would argue that it's not going to take the and make it any more predictable, or much more predictable, because it sounds like Kathy, what Corvallis went through is the effect of surprise more students and the relative position to the rest of the state. I mean, when we go out of here, we think that we're funding school districts at a certain headcount number, and the reality is it changes when it gets out there, because I guess that's that cushion factor that we're putting in the formula now, the...
That's the try and help, yeah.
199th school district, you know, gets spread back.
Now, predictably, because we've only scheduled this for a work, or for a public hearing, predictably, if we schedule this bill for a work hearing, they'll hear from the charter school chairman. They will be here.
Well, but they're not, yeah, they might be, but they won't be treated, as I understand this, and Steve, please correct me if I'm wrong, this roughly treats them, treats all schools, children the same that receive public funds. They're funded through the same formula.
Well, you're talking about two different levels, so you're talking about funding to the district, and then how much of that amount is shared by the district with the charter school.
I understand that. There's a requirement that came out of the education committee last time, is that a...
Elementary, 95.
High school, this passed on. I mean, that, I understand the difference, but the money that, the district can only pass on money that it gets from the state.
Correct.
So you, it really makes sense to use the same formula.
Further arguments among the committee members and the staff?
No, it was different.
No. I think we've gotten the oven here, and I appreciate you helping us understand. It's a relatively simple concept, but relatively complicated to explain. Thank you very much. Any other questions for the committee?
The problem, you get people in here who really understand how it works.
I know. If there are any other persons here present that wish to offer testimony on Senate Bill 16,
thank you.
Please step forward. Thank you. Hearing and seeing none, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 686, and we will reserve further action for later. We have another bill on our agenda this morning in Senate Bill 484. This, refreshingly, is related to taxation. Good morning. Welcome. Thank you. 448 is the bill before us, and what we'll ask is that staff gives the committee a brief orientation to Senate Bill 448, and I see that we have a couple of folks who have signed up to offer testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 448 affects local business income taxes, and specifically it would require that political subdivisions imposing income taxes use the taxable income base defined in Oregon statute, including the apportionment rules in ORS Chapter 314. These provisions would become effective beginning 2002 filing period, and it would seem to specifically apply to Multnomah County business income tax and the Portland business license.
Okay. We always love to hear bills that will affect only the Portland community. Let's bring up Jim Wadsworth from the City of Portland and Michelle Easter from the League of Oregon Cities, and we will open the public hearing on Senate Bill 448. Good morning. I don't know if you intended to do two-part harmony, but that's
fine.
Is that good? Again, thank you. Good morning.
Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Michelle Deister with the League of Oregon Cities. We have some concerns about Senate Bill 448. As staff just said, it appears to prohibit taxes based on gross receipts or revenue. This could have implications on municipal franchise fees imposed on utility and telecommunications companies, as well as just business license taxes. Since the passage of Measure 5 and 50, franchise fees are the second largest source of revenue after property tax revenue for many cities. These franchise fees represent a stable, reliable source of funding for essential local services such as public safety, street repair and maintenance, and the like. These services benefit the companies that pay these fees as well as the residents of the municipality. The telecommunications franchise fee statute has been agreed to and negotiated over time with representatives from the industry to change the basis for this fee, while that may be advantageous to the industry, seems unnecessary. Some franchise fees are calculated on gross revenues based on specific services in a given municipality. It may be difficult to determine taxable income based upon such a narrow set of circumstances. And figuring taxes and fees based on taxable income could change payment schedules, potentially causing cash flow issues in some municipalities. Likewise, this bill could, it would preempt municipal authority to impose a gross receipts tax or business license fee based on gross revenues. A few cities currently impose such a fee, having used a public process and allowing for public input in order to do so. And my colleague here, I'm sure, can tell you a little bit more about how that would affect the city of Portland and Multnomah County. Thank you.
Thank you.
Chair Ferrioli, members of the Senate Revenue Committee, I'm Jim Wadsworth with the Bureau of Licenses in the City of Portland. Various cities and counties license businesses for regulatory and revenue purposes in a variety of ways. Some base their calculations on square footage, numbers of employees, number of rental units, gross receipts, net income, or some combination of more than one factor. Portland's had a business license tax since 1861. Prior to 1975, gross receipts were used to calculate the fee due. In 1975, under Mayor Neil Goldschmidt, the business community was involved in reviewing the business license law and determined that a net income-based license fee was a more equitable way for businesses to contribute their fair share to the support of the Portland City services. In 1990, another review committee reviewed the business license law and recommended changes that were adopted by City Council. Portland Attorney Steve Janik chaired this review. The committee was very concerned with balancing equity, revenue neutrality, and sound tax theory with their recommended changes. In 1992, another limited review was performed to ensure that the code conformity and consolidated administration of the City of Portland business license tax and the Multnomah County business income tax programs also balanced the equity, the revenue neutrality, and sound tax theory. Mr. Janik also chaired that review. The compensation allowance deduction was indexed to inflation for tax years beginning on or after January the 1st of 1999 at that time. The City of Portland's opposed to this bill. One priority for Portland is to support small local businesses. This bill requires the city to use allocation and apportionment rules as defined in state statutes. One such rule is known as throwback. Currently, the City of Portland does not require any company to throw back sales to Portland if they have any business activity outside of Portland. This bill will also require local businesses to now give Portland credit for all those sales. This will increase the tax that the business pays to Portland. Throwback added to the use of multiple factors, which is what the state uses to apportion income, will disadvantage local businesses in competing with national, multinational firms that have very little payroll and property in Portland, but have large sales. A business would get no deduction for the Portland license fee instead of any tax based on or measured by net income as the current law provides. A business would have two different net income calculations to determine the Portland business license tax and the Multnomah County business income tax. The business license would be added back only in the Portland tax calculation, and the business income tax would be added back only in the Multnomah County tax calculation. This creates inconsistent treatment of taxes on the local level and increases the likelihood of incorrectly calculating taxes due, which creates a burden for both the taxpayer and the City of Portland. In fact, we currently do not require any taxpayer to add back the deduction for the City of Portland business license. Business entity choices, such as operating as a sole proprietor, a partnership, or a corporation, can dictate both how the business determines income and who is responsible for reporting it. Both the city and the county limit the compensation that can be paid to an owner. In the case of a sole proprietor or a partnership, wages cannot be paid to owners or partners and deducted in the same way as in a corporation. The current city and county law requires compensation paid to an owner to be added back
and then allows a very specific deduction for compensation. The size of the business does not cause different treatment. Several Northwest headquartered businesses that gross over $5 billion annually have one or more controlling shareholders that are paid a considerable salary. These salaries are added back in the same limited deduction as required. This bill would require the City of Portland to assess our tax on each partner and shareholder, resident and non-resident alike, instead of the partnership or S-corporation. This will create an administrative burden on the city, but more importantly, an administrative burden and financial burden on each partner and shareholder that now have no liability to file or pay the Portland business license or county business income tax at the individual level. Preliminary analysis estimates the initial revenue losses to the City of Portland to be approximately $10 million and revenue losses to Multnomah County to be approximately $9 million. Administrative costs would increase by approximately $1 million, and our account load would conservatively increase 300%. Our research has not yet determined what impact this proposed bill has on the city and county's net operating loss. The revenue and administrative cost impacts would increase even more when that analysis is finished. Do you have any questions?
Questions from the committee? Hearing and seeing none.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else here present who wishes to make testimony on Senate Bill 448? Hearing and seeing none, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 448. The chair doesn't anticipate going into work session on Senate Bill 448. Colleagues, that concludes our business for today. We are back in session tomorrow, and perhaps I'll bring up Paul Warner and ask him to go over the week schedule with the committee so that we can see what we're anticipating this week. Good morning, Mr. Warner.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. On your couple things on your weekly schedule, tomorrow is a public hearing and possible work session on Senate Bill 397. That's the bill brought to you by the Employment Department that looks at the unemployment compensation rates, and one that you had one public hearing on and began to talk about those issues, and you had some testimony you didn't get to, and it's a pretty complicated issue. So that's the only thing on the agenda for tomorrow. And then we have a series of smaller bills for Wednesday, Senate Bill 469, Senate Bill 477, and Senate Bill 555. There's also Senate Bill 909, which is strictly for the purposes of moving to the Government Transportation Committee for discussion. It's in, has relating to the OLCC. On Thursday, it's House Bills 2612, 2677, and 2777. Those are all scheduled for possible work sessions. They're all relatively minor technical bills. So that's your schedule for the week. I have talked with the sponsors of Senate Bill 67, the capital gains reduction, and that has been scheduled for next Wednesday, the 28th. So we would get a lot of public testimony on that. And I also talked with at the end of the workday, and he had met with his board and has some discussion he'd like to have with you, Mr. Chair, about scheduling some of the school formula bills, and we can find a good date that would work for the committee on those.
Colleagues, the fact is that we determined as the chair for the committee that we would have no further hearings on school funding formula issues until we got a response back from Mr. Rose, and we are anticipating scheduling that response very quickly, and that will give us at least the a direction that a couple of different organizations represented by Mr. Marshall and Mr. Rose have taken, and that testimony will be brought as soon as we can get that scheduled. We'll bring back those formula questions before the committee. And
Are they in agreement?
They have actually brought, are willing to bring forth and have recommendations for formula adjustments.
Together?
Yes. So that will be a wonderful opportunity for the committee to actually take action on this work that we've been doing so far. Meanwhile, there's no other business to come before the committee.
If I can mention one more thing,
yeah.
Mr. Chair.
Absolutely.
We did release our Oregon tax incidence model on Friday. Senator Beyer was there. I was one of the members of the Oversight Committee. We are making more copies, and so we'll make sure you get that copy of that along with the summary material at the meeting tomorrow.
Sure.
That is part of the OTIM meeting.
By income categories and types of individuals.
So, colleagues, we have a good week's worth of work before us, and at the end of the week, I believe we'll have clarification on what we'll do with school funding formulas. Thank you very much, and we'll be in session tomorrow morning at 8:30.